Tim Slagle, Brian Miller on the other side.
Hello.
And we were talking about what we wanted to talk about today. And I saw a quick blurb on that Paul McCartney is doing audio emojis. I believe for Skype is what I saw, which
who should give us a sponsorship, by the way. Don't you think? Yeah, I feel like they should.
Yeah. Yeah, brought to you by Skype and GarageBand.
Yeah. We'll expect that royalty money to be rolling in anytime soon.
it occurred to me that, of course, the first thing is because they were saying that this is a internet bubble 2.0 is about to crash, that there's just too much money around Silicon Valley. Mm. And the fact that they've hired Paul McCartney to do audio emojis, I think, is indicative of the ridiculous amount of money that's floating around.
Yeah, that is true. That's like that kind of money where you're just, you know, you see those like a restaurant in New York has made a $30,000 hot fudge sundae. Would you, you know? But it's like it's a gold diamond encrusted spoon, and we sprinkled gold flakes on it. You know, it's like the equivalent of saying like, I had Ryan Gosling mow my lawn yesterday. It was pretty great. It was $7 million. But people definitely saw how much money I have to throw away.
That's, and that's exactly, you know, that kind of stuff probably goes on in Silicon Valley. They probably actually, who's the boy in Desperate Housewives, the lawn boy in Desperate Housewives?
Oh, right.
I would bet that you could, that it would not cost that much to have him cut your lawn. Carly Fiorina could actually pay him to cut her lawn.
Yeah, no, I that would not surprise me in a weird. I mean, you hear about actually, you know, I've heard about celebrities getting weird private requests all the time, and I think as we know as comics, you know, there's a certain level of what we'll do publicly in terms of shows. And, you know, it's like, hey, look, you're not going to tell me what to say unless you're going to maybe pay me a little extra to do a clean show and all that. But privately, something maybe you don't put on your website, or some corporate calls and said, we want you to do 40 minutes about weed eaters. We're going to pay you $10,000, you know. You do the show about weed eaters,
oh,
right?
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
For 10 grand.
Oh, and so, you ain't kidding.
Of course. And almost every comic has some corporate shows. Even these comics that people think of as super edgy or whatever. It's like, yeah, so some hipster company hires them. But, you know, they don't want to be seen as corporate shills. So, you know, most people don't put that stuff on their website. But almost every comic does it. I can only imagine that the more famous you get, just the more and more ridiculous weird offers that you get for essentially private functions, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Beyonce, come to my Christmas party for $4 million.
It's a line I used to do, is that everybody, every single human being is in a similar profession. We just all have different hourly billing schedules.
That's very eloquent. I like that. I like that. It's true. And it's not even – I don't even feel bad about it. I always think like people shouldn't be ashamed of their – you know, when you take a corporate gig. I mean, you might not – I might not take one for a corporation or a group, you know. If the you know, the neo-Nazi party wanted to hire me to do a tight 30 at their Christmas shindig, I think I might skip that one. But
maybe,
you know.
yeah, because there are a few things that you really have to weigh against your future ability to sell yourself.
Yeah. I mean, there is. I mean, I wouldn't say my integrity is completely for sale by any stretch, but you know. And because I think most people who do work like that realize, look, a Christmas party is a Christmas party is a Christmas party. You know, I can go, you know, if you're a musician, you can go play your violin. If you're a comic, you can go make fun of the crowd's clothes in any setting for the most part. You know, it's all basically the same crap, you know. People aren't nearly as different as they would like to think they are. It's like, find out who's the boss, make fun of his car. They're going to love you.
But basically, you said that you did not understand what exactly Paul McCartney was doing.
Oh, right. So now that you say audio emojis, does it mean like – it's like if you would Skype me a tone and that tone would indicate like, oh, I sure liked what you just said. Would
actually,
an audio emoji?
What it seemed more like –
uh-huh.
Is that, you know, when you log on to Skype and you call me and it does that beep, 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 beep noise?
Yeah.
is that Paul McCartney's writing new ones of those.
Oh. How's that an emoji?
Yeah, that's what they call it. They call it audio emojis. That's what you know, so instead of beep 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 beep, you can actually pick it so it goes beep. And that one was
written
by Paul.
So it's essentially like a ringtone, but it's more like a dial tone than a ringtone.
Well, there was also something there where they showed like two snakes entwining in each other, and then there was like a little 5-second song that he wrote to go with that. So it's like a little soundtrack behind the emoji too. But I don't know. I don't know how I would send you an emoji on Skype. I you know, we just use the utilitarian aspect of it. We don't really use it as a social
right.
site, which is probably what they would like us to do.
Sure. That's what everybody would like you to do, right? I mean, yeah, I think Cub Foods or some grocery store wishes you use their website as your social act, you know, whatever. Anything that gets clicks and traffic and
Interestingly, I was going back and forth on Facebook Messenger with a comic that I'm working with,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you know, can you give me the email address of where we're working? Mm-hmm. And I sent him the email address, you know, for the woman that we're working at, and dang if an ad for the venue did not pop up in the news feed like 2 seconds later.
Yeah, it happens that fast.
Yeah.
Everything's so integrated. I just had to kind of start getting this new payment. I don't want to get too into it, lest I guess someone want to hack it or whatever. But I just had to kind of get this new online payment method going for this person I'm writing for, and it was a payment method I'd never used. And just there's just like my bank just refused not. Like, my bank was basically like, look, if you want to do anything with us through the service, like, you're gonna surrender us control of your Facebook and your, you know, like you just have to let them in everywhere. My wife and I were both really grumbling about how, you know, Skynet style, like in the Terminator movies, like the computers are just forcing you to connect everything.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Facebook still insists that they need my phone number for security.
Yeah. And I still keep not giving it to them because I don't understand why Mark Zuckerberg needs my phone number. Yeah. You know? Well, and I always just think it's so short-sighted and so dumb because when people look, you know, the keys, everything from the keys to my house to the keys to my car to my child's pacemaker is all on this cell phone. You're like, oh, you mean the cell phone I've seen you drop drunkenly 1,500 times? Maybe that's not the brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, that's actually what they want to do. They want to make your cell phone so that's when you're leaving the house, that's the only thing you have to pick up.
Yeah, which is nice in theory in a certain way, but as far as I'm concerned, has just such a huge obvious downside.
Yeah, it never works that way.
No,
you know, originally the idea of a computer, they said, well, we're gonna in the future, there's not going to be any paper. They said, you know, the paper's going to go, you know, that the sell your paper stocks because no one's going to use paper. Now everything can be done electronically.
Yeah.
And, if this were a video podcast, I could show you the stacks of paper that are sitting around my computer right now.
Yeah, I just actually read an article that said that on campuses that library book usage is going up, not down. And they think that people – they said that kids are basically saying, I got screen fatigue and I would just really rather – read this book. You know, I would really rather carry this around and read this. And that the theory of the article is that we at some point we kind of hit peak screen. And that people do have a screen tolerance that's going to, you know, kind of balance out to some degree.
So that people are actually going to go back to pages? That they're going to they're going to like a smelly old book full of boogers?
Yeah, I think I do, especially for long sustained stuff. You know, I mean, I like to read news stories on my phone, but I don't like to read novels on my phone. You know, I mean, it's a very different thing. It's the same way as I like to watch a funny video, a quick, you know, or maybe a trailer on my phone. But people who like watch movies on their phone, I'm like, that's insanity. I like movies too much to do that to movies, to shrink them onto my phone.
And people that like to listen to podcasts, no
segue.
That's the end of the first segment. You think that people want to let in on the silly love song?
And welcome back to the Rule of Three, segment two. Interesting story in the news. There was a cruise ship, supposed to be a 7-day cruise ship, heading from going from New Jersey to the Bahamas, which I gotta say,
7-day cruise.
Yeah, and I gotta say, in terms of sheer PR-itude, is there any easier sell than people of New Jersey, if you get on this thing, you'll be in the Bahamas. Like, I feel like that's as far as you can go from one side to the other. And yeah, put me on that.
Meaning what?
You can get the heck out of New Jersey and get to the Bahamas.
On the spectrum
of places you can be, New Jersey is a 1 and Bahamas is a 10, you know? It's like, so I just have to get on that and then I won't be here, I'll be there? Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, you know what? It actually, by that measure, it kind of is actually an enticing cruise.
It's a very enticing, especially if you live in New Jersey. It's like, yeah.
All you have to do is walk through Newark and then go Newark and get to the beach. Just as you get to the beach, we'll pick you up. You know, we'll pick you up in an amphibious vehicle so you don't have to wade through the garbage.
Yeah, right. We'll golf cart you up this ramp onto this thing, and then you sit at the buffet, and pretty soon you're not in New Jersey, you're in the Bahamas. So I understand the mindset of these people who might want to go on this trip. The trip does not go well because, specifically, apparently there was a massive storm, and the captain, the great quote, the captain was overheard saying, "I can outrun this one." Right? He thinks, like, I can totally make it. And he doesn't, and these poor people are in their boat. Apparently this boat spends a few hours at a 45-degree angle. People are sent to their staterooms, which are basically just turned into chambers that go in circles, Poseidon Adventure style. But I was just thinking, it's so funny that nothing ever changes and people never do learn. I mean, the Titanic, all of these things have happened. There's all these, president, and this guy looks at this cloud and says, "Nope, I got this one."
Well. First of all, it was probably bad planning on the part of the cruise lines. I don't know how long you're talking about this. Like, this is a new cruise.
Of course. These things go a million times. I'm sure the boat's 20 years old.
Is it the line? I don't know.
It's an established cruise line, so it's an old.
Because it seems to me that the peak season for getting out of Jersey would coincide with the peak storm season.
Mm.
And it seems to me that this is not that a lot of these trips probably did not make it all the way to the Bahamas, which has to be a disappointment.
Yeah, to say the least. But there's an interesting kind of hubris to it too, because I will admit that I never feel as bad when I see that bad things have happened to people on cruise lines, because like there's a Midwestern part of me. I was on a cruise one time. I was on a boat. My buddy got married on a boat, and so I spent the day on the cruise ship, and he got married. Then we all get off the boat. The boat sails, and I'm just too Midwestern to enjoy them. There's part of me that just think, like, much like the captain who thinks he can outrun the storm, and much like the boat that can't be destroyed by any iceberg, I feel like you've tried to have too much relaxation and pleasure packed into one space. This is your Titanic. You have leaned into entertainment too far, and you have been smoten by the gods of prudence.
There's a side of me. I'm looking at, and sure, I'm looking at it from the comfort of my easy chair.
Sure.
But looking at the video that people took out the window of these mountainous waves that are on either side of the boat, there's a part of me that says, that kind of looks like fun.
Hope you brought your Dramamine. I can't imagine.
I'm sure, like you said, if you're locked inside of a stateroom that's rolling around like the OK Go video, the new OK Go video, it's nowhere near as pleasant. But
oh, I see. But when you're just sitting here,
but when just sitting there looking at it, go, yeah, that's kind of cool. It would be kind of neat to see that, you know, because you see the these special effects in movies like A Perfect Storm, and there's a new one out right now where you just see these boats struggling up this mountain of water, and then coasting down the other side. That there's something about it that looks like it would be relatively entertaining.
Well, maybe my number one phobia is open water, like especially at night, especially in a storm, but like big, I'm on a lake, a big lake all day, been on a ferry across Lake Michigan, doesn't bother me, even though it is open water, but like choppy ocean water at night, that is nothing in the world is scarier to me. And I just can't make myself go out farther than like 5 feet in the ocean.
Huh.
It's just it's the abyss. I mean, it's like pure existential dread. It's so close to the metaphor that it's barely even a metaphor. You know,
I guess so. But I mean, from the comfort of a boat, you know, and as long as they don't close the bar.
Oh, right. On the normal cruise, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would be a little unnerved if I thought too much about it. But no, I wouldn't like be like in a panic just thinking, oh, my gosh, we're on a boat. But on a storm-tossed sea, I would be reduced to a puddle that's making a smaller puddle.
And it's – you know, I wonder if they took a vote. I wonder when they finally said, nah, we're going back to Jersey. I wonder if they actually put it up to a vote. I wonder if they actually – the captain came, you know, and I picture this captain, by the way, like having, you know, looking like the captain from The Simpsons.
Oh, the same. Oh, right. Well, the reality is these are always like these Mediterranean guys. It's interesting. My favorite author of all time, David Foster Wallace, wrote my favorite essay of all time, which is A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again, which is the title of an essay collection. But the title essay is about This magazine sends him on a cruise ship. I think it's like a travel magazine or something to write what's ostensibly like a kind of a pleasant little puff piece. And he comes back with a 100-word essay or 100-page essay about like the neurotic breakdown that he has on this boat. And part of it is about his sort of obsession with the weird race and class lines not even racing class lines, but just like the structure. He said that he learns the structure of the boats, and it's very interesting. But there's a couple of countries that supply essentially most of the boat personnel. And I wish I could remember it, but I can't quite remember it off the top of my head. But it's worth reading the essay to find out. But it's interesting.
In different countries are relegated to different levels of the ship.
Yeah, there was a couple of countries that basically provided most of the mid-level staff, which could be anything from a waiter down to the guy cleaning the boat, and then the sort of maritime, you know, the captains, the sailor type guys were often from these other countries that owned the boats, and that it sounded like they did follow a kind of military style. I mean, I don't mean like they're like waterboarding people, but I mean it's like, you know, they kind of took the whole captain thing seriously, you know. Then it's very interesting. I mean, that's not the part that makes Wallace neurotic. It's his kind of obsession with not being able to escape the fact that everybody is thinking about his comfort all the time. Worth a read. It's one of the funniest things I've ever read.
Huh. But. Yeah, it seems to me that the Mediterranean captain would be like that, you know, that Italian cruise ship where the captain was the first one off the ship.
That Italian guy was the best. He was all but like pushing babies out of the way and hurling himself into a lifeboat.
I cannot picture that guy going into the storm. That guy is like, hey, Jersey ain't so bad.
Yeah, it's funny. Exactly. No, that was definitely a much bolder, braver Mediterranean dude. Yeah, I gotta say, maybe the most racist caricature I've ever imagined in my brain is definitely when I think of that Italian guy, because I just think of a guy with a big pussy mustache going, "Oh, get me out of here!" You know, like it's just the most horrible caricature of an Italian. It's like the Simpsons version of an Italian captain just knocking over cans of tomato sauce on his way to this boat. You know.
Yeah, I actually I pictured Christopher from The Sopranos.
Oh, very nice. I love that guy.
Yeah, sorry, Tony. I freaked, okay?
Speaking of abandoned ship, we shall abandon the segment for the smoother waters of segment 3.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic point aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour.
And for the final segment here on Rule of Three, I think, Tim, you said you spotted my – I was Facebooking a little last night, which, by the way, if I post on Facebook and it's not promo for a show, I'm either in an airport or I'm drinking. That's it. That's the only time I ever go on Facebook. And I was a little turnt.
You know that just occurred to me. That I believe it was last week you were saying that you only use it for promotional purposes, that you've actually turned off notifications for everybody.
Well, I still post stuff on my wall. Usually,
Did I just say something that I wasn't supposed to say?
No. I tell people. Yeah, no, I tell people that. Yeah, okay. It's because I just found myself wasting too much time in my news feed, and I would just get caught up in these Facebook arguments. There's a whole big Facebook thing going on in the Minneapolis comedy community right now, and a lot of people are spending a lot of time arguing with each other online. I have no desire to get pulled into weird political arguments with people I don't intend to talk. You know what I mean? And then what happens is you actually want to talk to somebody about something, but then some yutz that has nothing to do with anything pops up, and everything takes this weird turn, and pretty soon you're like, why am I arguing with my my aunt's boss about you know, the New Hampshire primary?
I actually got into a little of that this week. It's, I'm ashamed to say, that article came up that the Michigan legislature banned sodomy.
Mm-hmm. Did
and
they?
It was no, not at all.
It seems improbable.
Yeah, what it was a blogger did not know how to read law. Is that basically what they did was they cleaned up a little bit of the language in the Anti-Cruelty Act that dates back to 1931. Mm. And it said that that you'll be guilty of a felony if you commit an abominable and detestable act either with an animal or with mankind. You should be guilty of a felony in 15 years. And that's the way the law has been since 1931. And they, rather than shall be guilty of a felony, they turned into guilty of a felony. And somebody read that and they thought that it was a new law that was being passed. They didn't see that they were just cleaning up the language of the old law. And the blogosphere went wild with this. Michigan legislature bans sodomy.
Well, that's one of those things where it only takes one misinterpretation to, like, then a person quotes a person, quotes a person, and it's, you know, it's things are accepted as fact so quickly.
Oh, it's still going on. It's that one is still going on because people want to believe it. It fits into the narrative,
right?
That Republicans want to nose into your bedroom, and so it just in the wake of the Flint water crisis, this is another great way to attack the Republicans of Michigan. So
sure, and like anything, especially with the media, you know, one kid gets bitten by a shark, and all of a sudden there's 7 more shark attack stories in the next 2 weeks. But then you look it up and you're like, oh, so we had statistically the same number of shark attacks this 2 weeks as any 2-week period. Huh. You sure. know, it's like those they're trends and yeah, there's a whole I'm with you. So
there's a phenomenon and I'm going way off topic here. I'm sorry.
We'll get back.
Is that and I'm sure you've noticed it is that when you buy a car, usually it's a car that you really didn't pick. It's one that you kind of inherited. You know, more or less, but then it becomes your car. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you become aware of how many cars like yours are out on the road.
Oh, yeah. I'm constantly seeing I've got a blue Elantra, and all of a sudden it's like, is every car on the road a blue Hyundai Elantra? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. It's a weird thing that happens in your brain is that once you establish the blue Elantra as mine,
mm-hmm.
is there in your monkey brain, you see mine all over the parking lot.
Or have you ever done the thing, you learn a new word, you know, and then yes. all of a sudden you're like, man, I learned a new word last week, and I swear I've heard three people use it since then. It's like, well, you probably heard people use it before, you just skipped over it.
Well, when they said Bush had gravitas, that was that was not accidental. But anyway, the original subject I think we were on.
Right. So Facebook. Yeah. So you saw me somewhat drunkenly Facebooking because I was watching last night after I got home. I was having a cocktail and rewatching A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie from a few years back, which I had been very excited to see on opening night. I went with my wife. We love the Coen Brothers. Two of my favorite movie makers, two of my favorite artists of any kind, you know. And we really hated the movie. I thought it was depressing. I didn't think it was funny. I thought it was too bleak and a little too nihilistic. I don't know what. So I decided I got to give it another chance. So a couple of years ago, I watched it again. Hated it again. Felt very confident about that. But then
I was absolutely right the first time about this film.
Yeah. And any really great movie maker, if I watch one of their movies and I don't like it, I always rewatch it. If, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson or because I Scorsese, because I figure they deserve at least twice, you know. Maybe I miss something. So, and just because I don't get something doesn't mean I would write it off as terrible. But so anyway, so I saw Hail Caesar, really enjoyed it. It got not great reviews. People are nuts. It's a fantastic movie. It's very funny. And it just kind of put me in this weird thought. I was like, I think I should rewatch Serious Man. I have this itch to watch this movie that I know I hate. I hated it both times. And I put it on and I started rewatching it and I loved every second of it. I thought it was one of their best movies. I don't think I've ever come around farther on a movie than that movie.
Huh. What was it that you think you missed the first time?
I was criticizing when I was writing my review of Hail Caesar. I was sort of complaining about people who complain about that movie, saying like that to want it to have a really grounding central plot was to sort of foist upon it a structure that it was intentionally resisting. And it just kind of got me thinking about the Coens' intentionalities and their kind of pranksterism. And I kind of came at Serious Man with a different approach, which is that, okay, what this is there's the central question of what is the meaning of life? And this is an intellectual slapstick, or maybe an existential slapstick comedy about people utterly failing to find meaning in life in all different ways.
Huh.
And I kind of came at it before like it was a Job story.
It was.
And it is, in a way, for sure. But
it is. It's a suburban Job. Rather than beset by Boyles and
he's beset by Cy Abelman and all these things. Yeah. it's so funny. But I don't think the point of the movie is supposed to be why does God test us exactly or quite. I think the Job thing is kind of a canard. In the same way that people got maybe a little bit hung up on certain details of their other movies, like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And the Sullivan's Travels connections or the Odyssey. People kind of overstate and understate some of that, like the Odyssey stuff in that, especially. The key of the movie is all these people are searching for meaning and they're all completely failing to find it. And when you kind of look at it that way, it is almost like a series of sketches, sort of like an intellectual slapstick sketches. And the movie gives you the key right away at the very beginning when Michael Stuhlbarg is talking to the Korean transfer student who failed the test. And he's talking about Schrödinger's cat. And he says, well, you failed the test. You know, the math is all wrong. You're all wrong. And he said, I didn't know there would be math on the test. And he says, well, that's physics. He goes, but I understand. I understand the cat. The cat's dead. The cat's not dead. I wrote it on the test. And Stuhlbarg replies, these are just little stories that we use to try to help you understand it, but it's meaningless without the math. And then the only person who tries to do the math in the movie, there's only really one person, and that's his brother, and it drives him insane.
Huh.
The Mentaculous is him actually trying to do the math.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and I just loved it. And so now I'm just watching it. Also, I had such a terrible 2015 that like the bleakness of it somehow – I both commiserated with the bleakness of his situation, but also had more of a, yeah, what are you going to do? Which I think is genuinely the a more profound and sincere intellectual statement that the movie actually is trying to make, which is literally the best you can say sometimes is, what are you going to do? I mean, it's, you know, it's yeah. very bleak, but it's
stuff pretty happens.
Funny. And I love that, you know, there's the great scene where the kid finally goes to see the rabbi at the end, and he's been listening to Jefferson Airplane, and then this kid doesn't even want to see this rabbi that everybody wants to see, and he's supposed to have all this deep knowledge, and the rabbi says, when the truth is found to be lies, and all the hope within you dies, then what? I came out of my chair laughing when he said, then what? It's so funny.
On that note.
Yes.
I guess we will now say then what till next week.
Yes. Go watch the series, man, or rewatch it if you thought you didn't like it. And then go to my website, which should be updated soon. Hopefully with the podcast as well. BrianMillerComedy.com.
And TimSlegel.com, where all the podcasts are currently listed.
Indeed. Cool. See you guys next time.
Bye. When the truth is found to be